Every day of my life, I'm just on a field trip.
I'm here in the Google Street View car.
I've always wondered how hard it is to be a flight attendant.
In 5 minutes, I'm performing magic to a real audience who paid to be here.
Just about a year ago, I set a goal to run the 2024 New York City Marathon.
I have become obsessed with the blood industry.
I just want to see the behind the scenes of everything and how it works, and it turns out other people like seeing that too.
You're clearly somebody who takes initiative.
If you give me real access to something that I can cover journalistically, that would be exciting to me.
You've been at Morning Brew for almost 4 years. When you were negotiating for this contract, what were the non-negotiables?
One of them was the amount of time that the contract was for. I am a little too flighty to talk about a 3-year contract. It freaks me out.
If you were to go independent, what needs to happen? What do you need to put in place to make that work?
I think the easiest crutch in the world to making really interesting social video is...
Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. My name is Francis Zierer, and today we're speaking with Macy Gilliam, creator of the Out There video series at Morning Brew. She joined the company as a social editor about 4 years ago, became a video producer, and 1 year ago, as we record, switched from being an employee to being a creator on a contract, which even includes some revenue share. So we are going to talk about that, but we will start with a breakdown of how she makes an episode of Out There. Enjoy. The premise of your series, Out There, is that you spend some time learning how to do a job and tagging along with professionals in the field, and you make a short documentary about it, typically between 12 to 25 minutes long. I would like to start by walking through the full production process for one of these, from ideation to publication, soup to nuts. You can pick a different one if you want, but I really liked the flight attendant training one as a specific example.
Flight attendants was a fun one. Okay, production on that. That one was an inbound opportunity where United reached out to me. They didn't offer me this. United reached out to me. They offered me to come to an influencer event they were hosting in the city. I was the only person there who wasn't like a travel influencer. And they were just showing off the new menu in their first class cabins. And like they had examples of the new seats in their cabins. And everyone else in the room is like, come with me today to check out United's like latest and greatest in their Polaris, whatever. And I'm like, no hate to that. That's great content, but it's not what I do. I used that to get in the room with the PR girl and explain to her like, hey, if you give me real access to something that I can cover journalistically, that would be exciting to me. But I was like, there's nothing for me in this room. I mean, trying the first class menu was yummy.
What were you eating? What was the bite?
There was a potato chip with caviar. One of the most classic rich people snacks, I think.
In the Pantheon.
They love that. Mm-hmm. They love that. They can't get enough of that. So that one was, United reached out, offered me some access to something. I spun it into more access, which is generally how it goes when a brand offers me access. But then from that point, to be clear, United has no control over what I'm doing, insight into what I'm doing. They give us no money. They're simply giving me access to their space. Obviously, they do control what they show me. Like they're the ones leading us around the facility planning.
But you're not sending them the edit later.
We're not sending them the edit ever, which, yes, that's how it works. From there, we've confirmed that I have access to their training facility because I've decided that that's the most interesting element of being a flight attendant is the training they go through. Because they have this huge training facility with all these, it's basically like flight attendant training is doing 100,000 simulated plane crashes in all sorts of ways, which is really funny to watch unless you're afraid of plane crashes, which I'm not.
Are you? Okay, good.
No, and I wasn't before and I'm not now. If anything, I'm like super chill now and I'm like, I should always sit in the exit row. I've opened that door before. I know how to open that. I've done it. I know how to inflate the raft. I think I say this in the video, but like if I were to ever actually be in a plane crash, it would be hilarious because I'd be like, you guys would never believe I've done this before.
It's kind of like when they're on a plane. Is anybody a doctor? Has anybody done flight attendant training?
Has anybody and then you're gone standing to flight attendant training for
before
one single
the 10
day?
Flight attendants?
Yes.
Okay. Well, so one single day. So you get the access and then it's 1 day. It's like this video, I think, is about 17 minutes long. And this is.
Yeah.
Almost all entirely from the training set. So this is 1 day of filming, essentially.
Generally, the videos are 1 day of filming with the guest or 1 day of filming on site, wherever it is. Sometimes there are multiple guests and multiple days of filming that way, but generally it's 1 day of filming. So we get to the United's training center. That was the craziest amount of PR people that have ever been walking around with us as we were filming.
That makes
they
sense.
Had, I think, a crew of like 10 or 12 people that had been prepped for weeks on like what to show us, where to take us, like what we do. It was very, and they were all like really excited, which was nice. By the way, our crew is me and two people filming.
So there's like four times as many handlers.
Way more handlers than us, which is always funny. I have them send us a schedule ahead of time of where we're going to be, how long we're going to be in each space. We can go back and forth on. I ask them to send me also like pictures and videos of the spaces that we'll be in ahead of us getting there.
So you can prep shots and such.
So we can prep shots. I can figure out, oh no, that room looks way more interesting. I have no interest. Like the CPR room is fun, but it's not as interesting at all as the fact that they have a full size 737 in this warehouse on hydraulics that they can shake around and fill the cabin with smoke and I get to go down the slide. Like, obviously, I want to spend more time in the 737 room than the CPR room. So we can
or
adjust.
Or in the pool.
Or in the pool. The pool is actually freezing. But exactly. So we can work together on the schedule. Then my shooters come with us. I call it going JFK style when we have two shooters.
You know, this. You've got a thing with JFK. I know you have that TikTok where you went to the spot where he was shot and it was one of your most popular TikToks. And some people in the audience or in your DMs were really kind of mad at you for making fun of JFK being shot.
It was funny. I was like, did you know him? It was a long time ago.
I mean,
they were like, he was a man with a family. What do you have? A Webby or two Webbies? They did know that I had two specifically.
Are you reading this off or is this just like seared in your mind?
No, this is seared in my mind. I have certain comments memorized. Not all of them, but I have enough of them memorized.
Okay, so it's one day of shooting. This is like one example of how you get into this. It's a day of shooting. And then like from like how much later are you publishing this? Because I think you've published like a dozen of these. I might be one or two off in this year.
We're trying to do eight this year. So like two a quarter. But generally, our process is a lot of post because it's so much field shooting and it's so much interview-based stuff. I'm trying to get better about doing more expansive pre-interviews now. So I have a better understanding of what the story is, obviously, before we film it. I always have a general hunch. It's why I'm making the video in the first place, that I have a hunch that the story is flight attendant training is super hard. There's way more that goes into it than you think. But, you know, it's hard to know these things before you've actually gone and done the interviews and done the filming. So our process is very post heavy. I would say generally it's about 3 to 4 weeks after we finish all the shoots that the video comes out.
You've been at Morning Brew for almost 4 years. It was your second job out of college, I believe. And you joined specifically as a social media editor, I think, to work largely on the Twitter and Instagram accounts. After about a year, you moved to video production. After about another year of that, you are a more senior video producer. And then 1 year ago, about as we record, you switched to this creator contract doing out there. So we'll get to that in a second. But I'm curious how you moved up into having your own show. From talking to you in the past and watching your content, you're clearly somebody who takes initiative. I get the impression that you're somebody who will annoy people until you kind of make it happen, right?
Correct.
In the workspace, like managing
that's exactly,
up, right? Is a more polite
exactly
way to say
right.
that. So tell me like how you went from, okay, I do Twitter and Instagram to now I've got my own show. Cause I don't think you'd ever worked in video before.
No. So, my experience before Morning Brew was I went to school for business. I had internships in social media marketing, some of which I would take it upon myself. I worked at a B2B SaaS company based in Montreal and I was doing funny, hilarious videos for them that were marketing videos.
So this is the kind of way of like, oh, our Gen Z social person has to do the video. Like that was kind of
exactly. But yeah, it was like in a marketing perspective, like not in this like media journalism landscape. But I went to school for business, had internships in social media marketing, and was doing some stand up at the time. And so I think that combination of funny business knowledge, social media knowledge, kind of rounded out to be perfect. When I started at Morning Brew, I was running Twitter. I was doing memes on our Twitter. And I immediately joined and Dan Toomey was doing the bulk of our video at the time. And I immediately told him, like, I love what you're doing. I would love to move in that direction. Anytime you need help with whatever, like, please let me know. So then I would be like holding the camera for Dan or acting in the background of one of his sketches or whatever else. Then I started writing some of my own scripts. They were awful. But I tried. And then after about 6 months, Toomey spun off his show Good Work. And so there was a spot open on the social video team for me to do video full time since I had been like working my way in that direction. Morning Brew is also a place where we do a lot of internal shifting and people can grow and change, which I think is really awesome. We have a show here that's a podcast called Per My Last Email that is the two hosts of it. One of them is the chief of staff to our CEO and another one, she does every job in the world, but some of her jobs are like merch and event planning. And these two people have a podcast now. Like, we're very open to people growing and changing their jobs and trying new things. So I start working on the social video team. In that role, I'm doing a daily social video, basically. It's 4 a week. I'm doing sketches, which basically for the first 6 months at least that I was doing the social video job, I was just doing my best Dan Toomey impression. I was like, what has Toomey done before that
worked in video? Can you do the voice, the Toomey voice?
I can, but he doesn't like it. We do so many impressions of each other around this office. This office is a sickening place to work. The amount of people here who do improv and stand up and can do really good impressions of your other coworkers is heartbreaking.
Wait, really? So as an aside here, when I had Rachel Carton on the pod in 2024, I know you've been interviewed in her newsletter, link in bio too. If anyone is listening and is not subscribed to link in bio, great newsletter, must read if you work in social at all. But I asked her like, if there was like one common thread that she'd seen among the people who are best at social media content. And she said that they all have some background in improv comedy. And you're talking about this. I know that Morning Brew has specifically paid for you and presumably some of your colleagues as well to take improv classes as well. So I think you said a second ago that you had messed around with that a little bit before joining Morning Brew. But tell me about like, I mean, I guess not just you, but the degree to which Morning Brew encourages people to do this and then what you've learned from that and taken into your job.
Yeah, absolutely. Morning Brew is super supportive of that. Like company-wide, we have a reimbursement for any class you want to take that's like not related to your job where they'll pay for like 50% of it or something, I think, to a certain amount a year, which is nice. But when it's a skill that's related to your job, which with my job, that's – I actually did sketch comedy at UCB. But yeah, I've been thinking about doing improv maybe.
Okay.
Morning Brew paid for the whole class. And so I did 2 rounds of sketch writing classes at UCB. It was super helpful in breaking my Dan Toomey impression. That was the only way I knew how to write a sketch was mimicking what Dan had done, what had been successful on the channel before, which I don't think was bad. But I was like, it's not exactly the style I would like to do. I'd like to learn how to do other things as well.
They don't need clones.
Exactly. But it was certainly a good way to get started and like warm up on the channel. And I appreciate Dan for letting me steal all of his jokes for that time.
What was what was the first video that you made? I'm assuming it's out there. I know you have the other series. Is this store? How is this place still open? What was the first video you made that was like, this is a Macy video?
I do think it was the How Are You Still in Business videos. Those were like, so after I like got a feel for sketches, I was like, okay, this is fine. But then I was like, there are so many great places. It happened naturally. I lived in Bushwick by this place that sells pigeons. My roommate came home one day and she goes, I just bought cat food from the craziest store. And then at the same time, one of my friends had just taken me to Casey Rubber Stamps for the first time in the East Village. Seeing both of those stores in the same week, I was like, how the hell do those places stay in business? These are crazy businesses. I was also like pretty fresh to New York. This was also really soon after I switched to the social video team. This was within 2 or 3 months after I started making video full time that I filmed the first one of those. So I found that really quickly and I found that I like that really quickly. I think the easiest crutch in the world to making really interesting social video is to go interview someone in their space and walk around their space with them. I do a lot of research ahead of those interviews, but I don't do a lot of writing of questions, which I do with other interviews. Because with those, you're walking around their space. The things that you're seeing are prompting your questions because it's such like a rich space that says so much about this person. Generally, the people who run these shops are like just, they're just passion projects. They have no real financial success.
This is so, I mean, I think part of what makes you good at this is you clearly are somebody, I mean, and this is related to the comedy of it all as well. You're clearly somebody who has like a, there's a short distance between like thought and just saying it out loud in this yes. curiosity way, right? Like I always say with me and this, the style of interviewing I do here, like I think when I was interviewing for this job, this is, I said this in the interview, like I'm somebody who at a party, the other person is going to leave the conversation first because I don't know how to leave and I'm going to keep asking questions yeah. and I don't know how to stop asking questions. And yep. you've got your own version of that.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just so nosy. I go, what's going on in that store? What's going on in there? Who works there? What's that like? Mm-hmm. I go, let me in the back of your store. And then now with the YouTube series Trying Jobs, I'm like, what is that job like? Every day of my life, I'm just on a field trip.
Yeah.
I also describe it as growing up, I was in Girl Scouts. Mm-hmm. And with Girl Scouts, every other week you have your Girl Scout meeting and it's basically a field trip. You go see how the firehouse works. You go see the behind the counter at Krispy Kreme Donuts. You see how the donuts are made. That's what I'm still doing.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to see the behind the scenes of everything and how it works. And it turns out other people like seeing that too.
If you had to do one of the jobs that you've done for out there for the next 5 years, not for content, but like you just had to do that for a living, which one did you do?
That's a really good question. God, I pick awful jobs. I would do the Google Street View car. Mm. If I could drive the Google Street View car, that would be awesome.
Because that's the most like context switchy job of all of them.
I think it is. Yeah. I think it would be the least boring over time. And also a lot of them I pick very like manual labor jobs. Oh, or maybe I would do magician. Magician was fun, but it was really difficult. Like my mic caught it and I think it made it into the episode because I forgot that my like, you know, over the
year
mic. Yes. I was like stepping out onto stage before my magic show at Caveat and I go, Jesus Christ. But my mic was already on. But I really was so terrified because in my head with the magic show, I was like, I had practiced for like a month and I had my friend who's a full-time professional magician, Jacob Greenwald, fantastic, highly recommend. Jacob had coached me up for like a month. I really had practiced. I was pretty ready. But in my head, I think I was still like, but it's basically stand-up. It's not basically stand-up. Stand-up will help get you a lot of the way there. But with magic, there is a definitive, did you get the trick right or not?
Yeah.
Whereas with stand-up, you can, you know, do whatever. And maybe some people didn't like the joke, but like it's a gray area.
You keep it rolling. Mm-hmm.
With magic, you either got the trick right or you didn't. So that one was tough. But I that one could keep me entertained for 5 years because there's so much to learn.
Yeah. Let's talk about your employment status. So
yes.
part of why I wanted to talk to you for this in the first place was that 1 year ago, maybe one month short of a year ago as we speak, you went from being an employee at Morning Brew to being creator talent. And there's a bunch of details. But first, is this something you pushed for or did Morning Brew start this?
It was kind of both. I think it was like the understood career progression following in the line of the Dan Toomey career progression.
Mm. Is he on one of these?
He's on a creator contract as well.
Okay. Yeah.
So I started on the video team and then it was clear that like, I have no interest, though I am very nosy and opinionated, no interest in moving into like management. So it was clear that the progression is, okay, then what is the progression? Give me my own show. Mm-hmm. So our chief content officer, he's our president now, but chief content officer is more explanatory of what he does. Devin Emery is fantastic and very much understands creators and the current creator landscape. And like, if you want to keep creators around, how to do that, how to reward them, how to build them up. So Devin, I think initially brought it up and was like, by the way, this is the career progression I see for you. Do you see this as well? And about a year before we started building out there, he was like, I think I had made a YouTube video or two at the time that were already in the style of out there. We just weren't calling it its own show yet, but it was the DoorDash one. And I think the hot dog one was also in that
And those
time.
Ones did really well. Right now, the DoorDash one, I was watching it this morning, has a million views on YouTube.
Yeah. So those, I think I just immediately realized that like that is the style that I liked. And so over about a year, I do think Devin started the conversation. And then over about a year, we talked about, okay, is this like the direction we're leaning in? Is this enough of a unique style of content that we can call it a show? Mm-hmm. And then also we started the like contract negotiations of what does that look like? What am I looking to get out of it in that time?
Yeah. What were the like, so when you were negotiating for this contract, I know you'd signed with UTA, right?
Talent yes.
Agency. Was that specifically to negotiate this contract, or was that already something you've been doing separately?
That was specifically to negotiate this contract. However, it did not end up being helpful to the contract. And I would very much caution other creators to think very critically about what they are looking to get out of signing with any representation, who they are signing with as representation, but like the company as well as the people within the company. There could be a great agent at a very small agency, or there could be agents at a very large agency that are not right for you. Mm. I think that there is a lot in the representation space that they have not caught up to the way that things work. Also, when I talk to my friends, even friends who love their representation, I go, yeah, but are all your ad deals inbound? And they go, yeah. And I go, so what are the agents doing?
You know, I've heard this from other people. Yeah.
I think it's something that you have to think about, because there are other things they can do for you. But if you're wanting them to bring in ad deals for you, that's not what I have heard that most of them are up to. So I think that's tough. But yes, UTA did start the negotiation of my contract. I ended up kind of edging them out by the end because I found it not to be super helpful.
So when you were figuring out this contract, what were the non-negotiables where maybe there was some mistakes you'd seen peers made, or peers had said like, you got to get this. This is the thing you got to get right. Like, what were the like core non-negotiables for you?
One of them was the amount of time that the contract was for. So it's a 2-year mm-hmm. contract term that I signed last April. So I have a year on it left now. I am a little too flighty to talk about a 3-year contract. I'm like, that sounds crazy. I don't like the sound of it. It freaks me out.
But that so time too, you'd been at Morning Brew for 3 years. So it'd be like,
I've been at Morning Brew for 3 years already.
Again?
So I'm like, what? I'm going to be here for the rest of my life, basically. Mm. And I do like it here, but it's different to be locked somewhere.
Yeah.
One that's interesting that I think is different than a lot of people, the show doesn't have its own accounts, and that's by design. Mm-hmm. It is confusing for everyone, especially for advertisers. They go, so it's a show. Where can we watch the show? And we go, oh, on the Morning Brew account with everything else. And they go,
yeah,
right.
Let's stay on this for a second, because this is something I was quite curious about, because Good Work, Dan's show, has its own channel. And so like, I knew that this was a specific decision. Tell me more about why.
It's part of the thing about me not knowing how long I want to be here. And the other part of it is, and part of why I don't want to be here for maybe forever, is I don't love tying all my content back to business. I am making the most loosely associated business content in the world. Like, you can only call it business content from the perspective of I'm trying a job and then I'm talking about the industry, but like, it's not what I want to do forever. So I don't want to build out accounts that are for a show that at the end of the term, Morning Brew is either going to make me buy from them, or Morning Brew is going to keep, and that's not valuable to them. So what me and Devin really love, Devin, he came up with this idea. What we came up with is my show exists on the Morning Brew accounts with its own branding, but you can only find it there, so that we're not building up IP that neither of us want or can do anything with.
Makes a lot of sense.
And in this time, we're building up my personal accounts, which of course are mine and I can take with me and I completely own. So in my videos, not only do I cross post with the Morning Brew account on, you know, however much I want, but like in my most recent short from the maps video, I have a direct promo to my personal channel YouTube video, which is, and like that video, the maps video is I got to ride around Bosnia with a street view driver for Bosnia. And then on my personal channel, I have an extended cut of my interview with him that's like 12 minutes long. In the Morning Brew video, we only use like a minute of that just for time. But he had a lot of great stuff that just doesn't fit into the Morning Brew video. So I said, oh, I'll just post a longer version of it on my channel. So Morning Brew, because of the way my contract is set up, is completely supportive of me doing that. This is like explicitly how the contract was written. So now my personal YouTube channel is growing. I obviously take that with me when I leave, but also my videos are growing the Morning Brew YouTube channel rather than the Out There channel, which none of us know how long I want to be making that show.
Yeah. I want to get back to the your own channels in a little bit, but I want to make sure we finish this contract conversation first. What else? Was there anything else, or is that kind of, does that kind of wrap up? We've got the length of the contract. We've got the channel set up, the IP relationship. What else is there?
I am salaried, but I also get a percentage cut of the show's profit. I skewed more salary than percentage cut of the show's profit just out of personal preference and out of, I would just prefer to know what my income is.
Like stability.
More than relying on the ad sales, which also, and Devin and I talked about this, I have nothing to do with the ad sales on my show. That's not something that's within my, that's not my job to sell the show. Mm-hmm. So if you're monetizing and like incentivizing me based on if the show sells ads, then do you know what I'm going to spend my day doing? Trying to sell some ads on my show.
Yeah.
Which I have no interest in doing and shouldn't spend my time doing. So instead I got some like accelerators or whatever incentives built into the contract that are more performance based of videos of like, I think it's like if 5 YouTube videos in a year hit 1 million views or whatever, then it's like on the second year of the contract. Then I would get a higher percentage cut of the ads, I think. We didn't hit that, but that's okay.
A year ago, when you switched to this contract model, the published press reported on it. They reported that your contract nearly doubled your compensation from where it was when you were an employee. Is that, does that hold true? Was that sort of like performance-based? How has it been a year in? Like, are you happy
salary.
With this model? Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, amazing.
Yeah. No, I'm super happy with it. It's great. And like I said, like, I love the stability of an income and knowing what my income is. Mm. I am a little bit nervous to be more entrepreneurial and like go independent as a creator at some point because I love knowing what my income is and that I can count on a certain amount. It's really nice. It's better.
Yeah. I agree. So you're halfway through the contract and I know you're on record as saying this and as saying this to Morning Brew as well, that when the contract ends, you probably want to leave, maybe go independent, like you were just saying. There's one scenario where you go and do that. There's one scenario where maybe you just go to a different job, and probably a third scenario where you renew with Morning Brew. So let's walk through this. First, if you were to go independent and be a independent creator when the contract ends in a year, what needs to happen? What do you need to put in place to make that work?
I need to grow my personal accounts so that they are more monetizable and there is like more consistent content going out on there that people are like looking to those accounts and know that that's a place where I'm posting. Mm-hmm. I just posted my first long form YouTube video on my channel. That was the extra cut from the Maps video. So I need to be posting more consistently, which is hard to do because I already have a full-time job making YouTube content. So it's hard to then make bonus YouTube content outside of that. The good news is it seems like people really loved the very underproduced, barely edited bonus footage that I posted on my account now. And so I do think that's something that's on the table. It's not that I want to like not make great content, but I do have a limited amount of time.
Yeah. And it's leveraging what we've been talking about, which is like your, one of your core skills as a presenter, as a host, is just asking people questions and they keep answering them and then you ask more and they answer them and so on.
Right. I need to be posting more on my accounts. I would like to get some ad deals going on my accounts, which I am allowed to do in my contract. I can, in theory, advertise with certain advertisers. I have to run all advertising on my personal accounts past Morning Brew, and there's a very good likelihood that they say no to some of them because they don't want me selling competitive ads against the ads they're trying to sell on my stuff.
Cannibalize. Yeah.
Exactly. But if there was an advertiser that they deemed non-competitive, if it's a very small ad deal that's like, obviously that brand is not, does not have Morning Brew advertising dollars, then that's something. Or we've talked about if it was something where it's like small partnership on Macy's account to like build a relationship with that brand to then speak with them about like a larger Morning Brew advertisement. I would like to be doing a little bit of that just to have at least monetized my personal accounts a little bit before I count on it being my full income. I think those are the main things that would need to happen before I could go independent.
What about like a team? You strike me as somebody who really relishes collaborating with people. And, you know, we've already talked about how the business side isn't really a core competency or even something that you particularly want to do. I think that even anybody who is like a solo creator typically has maybe one formal relationship, but certainly an informal network of people like trading advice or like, you know, trading editing feedback on videos,
yeah,
et cetera. If you were to do this independently, what would be like, what would you be prioritizing for the people around you, the support system?
Yeah. So many of my friends are independent content creators, which is part of what makes me feel like that's possible at all.
Mm-hmm.
I just have some really fantastic friends in New York who do the same thing and are a little bit ahead of me in their careers and are doing it independently in a way that's very encouraging. I'm like, okay, if they can do it. I know these idiots. If they can manage this, I can't.
This moron. Oh, okay. So what about
I would also hire someone to be a shooter editor for me, which yeah. is a cost that I need to take into account before I like make sure I can do this. Because I'm not a good editor and I obviously can't film myself, especially with the kind of content I do. Like it doesn't work if I'm like vlogging this.
Yeah.
Like I want them to feel like little docs. I can't just selfie film this.
Speaking of the little docs, so you were recently on a panel at the Future of Nonfiction Video Conference. I was also there. I was facilitating a conversation. I was not on the main stage. Let's make it clear. You were on the main stage. I actually didn't make your panel, shamefully, but it was called Beyond Silos, the Shared Future of Documentary Journalism and Content Creation. And I bring this up just because I'm curious how you define your work. You're saying documentary. Is it documentary? Is it journalism? Is it creator content? Do these labels matter to you?
I think that it is a mix of all of those things, and it depends on who I'm talking to. When I'm talking to someone who I would consider like a capital J journalist, I describe myself, like when I'm reaching out for potential interviews, I say I'm a video producer at Morning Brew, if they are like a capital J journalist. When I'm talking to a small store owner, I describe myself as a video journalist. When I'm trying to like explain to like this old man that runs a shop that sells one thing and this is all he's done for 60 years, I'm like, how can I explain to him what I do in a language he'll understand? So I do think there are like it's a lot of crossover, and I do think it's evolving, but it is I really liked that panel, and I really like what Future of Nonfiction Video does, because I do think they all have a shared future and they're very similar and there's so much more overlap between them than there has been before. I think that they're like a proving ground for new talent in the like journalism and documentary space. But I also think it's like a testing ground for people who are already journalists or documentarians to like make something that's a little more low effort or like faster production turnaround time before they, you know, spend a year or so making a feature length doc about something. My favorite example is, do you know about Listers?
Listers.
The bird watching documentary.
Oh, I do, but only, I haven't watched it. I listened to the episode that guy did with Colin and Samir. That's all I know.
Yep. His name is Owen Reiser. He is a genius. He made this documentary and then just released it on YouTube. It's a 2-hour documentary about bird watching. I think it is absolutely the future of where so many things are going. He just released it for free on YouTube. You should watch the documentary, listen to the Colin and Samir episode about it. But before the documentary came out, he and his brother were on this road trip to make the documentary. And every single day for a year, they posted an Instagram reel that's like way underproduced, looks nothing like the documentary, is literally just like buddies hanging out, whatever. But it built up an audience, like a core audience, that like thousand true fans thing or whatever, where like those people knew that this documentary was coming and they were the first ones there being like, wow, this is what we've been waiting on for a year. So I do think social media can play very well into those spaces, can build up an audience and awareness for your documentary. And as Owen proved, can be the space where your documentary is posted. He just posted it on YouTube. And he talks about in the Colin and Samir episode, he made more money from posting it on YouTube and posting like a Venmo link being like, if you loved this, send me money. Yeah. And he said he made more money from doing that than like major streamers offered him to put it on their platforms.
It was at least like $70,000.
Yeah.
It was pretty solid. I wanted to ask one last question about the contract before we move off of that. And I understand too, if this is like, I don't really want to think about that yet, but let's say you end up renewing. What would it take for you to renew with Morning Brew?
If I renew with Morning Brew, it will be out of convenience and fear. I do like it here. I like it here so much. I'm like best friends with all my coworkers. Like I come here every day and I go, time to hang out with my friends.
Yeah.
I like it here a lot. But I do think I need to like push myself to do the next big thing. And I think I can't do that while I'm working here. And so I think I do need to like leave the comfort and convenience of salary, same job, like working with all my buddies here. Because I would like my career to move more into like the documentary space. Like I would love to make a feature length doc at some point. Like that is absolutely, you know, what I would like to be doing.
Yeah.
I can't do that while I'm working here. So if I were to renew here, it would be, if I haven't grown my personal accounts to the degree that I feel comfortable with those being my source of income, or found some sort of like other maybe like part-time thing or like collab thing where I would still have like some source of income and then make videos independently as well, which also maybe there's a world in which I do something like that at Morning Brew. But ideally, I would like to push myself out of the nest in a year.
Like so many pigeons before you.
Like so many pigeons before me, all sold from Pigeons on Broadway.
You know, I also lived right by there when I first moved here. But we don't need to get into that. I had some weird experiences.
Halsey J.
Halsey J. I never saw that store. I ate at, there's like He Cherokee Diner right next to it.
Yeah.
I think. I've eaten there, but I never noticed the pigeon place. So when I watched that video, I was like, how did I only lived over there for like 6-7 months. Anyways, you as a public character, right? Before I knew your name, before I knew who you were, I'd seen you on like Twitter, on TikTok, on Instagram, and I'd seen people specifically on Twitter referring to you as like the Morning Brew girl. And I've seen this elsewhere. I've the Morning Brew chick. Like it's this identity you have or had that now, as you've built your own show, you're maybe Macy Gilliam now, right? But some people maybe still know you as that. And I know that you have some level of discomfort with like becoming a public persona and being known. Tell me a little bit about how you are squaring that with this necessity of becoming a public persona. Like, how are you walking that line?
Yeah, it's a strange thing to be out and drinking with your friends and someone goes, I know you from your job. And you go, oh, right. Hello. And now I'm putting on my company voice and I go, thank you so much for saying hi. That's awesome. I have to go be drunk and silly now, but thank you. It's a strange thing, but it is something where like, I'm like, okay, that's the goal of this though, right? Like the goal is for the content to always get more popular. People are also always very nice and like, they love the stuff, which is great. They're always saying like how much they love my stuff. It's
they're
a great thing
because they like you and what you do.
Right. Yeah. Because they like what I make. It has shifted a little bit lately where it is normally they go, do you get Morning Brew? And I go, yeah. I think part of it too, by the way, is that I think because I never change my hair, I think because it's always just like this, I think it makes me so much more recognizable because what I've learned is a lot of people, all they can see about me is my hair. I'll get tagged in videos where people go, I thought this was Macy. And it's just a girl who has like vaguely the same haircut. Looks nothing else like me. But I think that's part of what makes me so recognizable on the street. But it has shifted a little bit lately from the Morning Brew girl to sometimes Macy to sometimes people are starting to recognize me for content on my personal accounts now. I've been posting a lot about knitting and fiber arts. And
hey, it's the sheep to sweater girl.
Are like, the sheep to sweater girl. They're like, oh, my God, I love your sweater thing. I love your knitting stuff. And I go, jeez. That's huge. Because the excitement of the like Morning Brew recognitions in the street are like, that has worn off a long time ago. But when someone is like, I loved your sweater stuff, I'm like, that's so exciting. Thank you for saying that.
You. Well, so on your YouTube too, which has 14,600 subscribers as we record, like you said, you just very recently published your first medium form, long form video on there. Everything else, I think there's like 17 reels and they are almost all your knitting content, right? Some of these have like one. I think one has like 17 million views. Maybe it's 1.7, and I missed. And my eyes had
no. It's 17. That video went crazy. It's a video of a woman at the fiber arts festival that I was at. That I knew that video would go that viral. By the way, I have a sense for these things.
Is this she's
spinning yarn straight off of her rabbit? You just like kind of like pick out the fur, like when your dog or cat is like shedding a lot. These rabbits shed so much. That you just kind of pick it out and she spins it straight onto the wheel as yarn. It was crazy. PETA commented. It was a whole thing.
What did PETA have to say?
PETA vindicated me. Nothing was going wrong in that video. That video was, I'm right, that animal is not being hurt and that's a completely normal and fine thing to do. However, PETA is also right that is not how most of those rabbits are cared for. And when you have a sweater that's made out of Angora rabbit, generally in a store, those rabbits are being abused. So generally you shouldn't buy Angora and think that that's how they're being treated. But anyway.
So tell me more about developing your personal channels though, because I think on Instagram you have like 60. On TikTok too, let me pull it up. You have, it's quite a contrast. You have 20,000 followers there. 2.4 million likes though. And usually like it's rare for that number to be so skewed. That
it's
ratio.
It's because that rabbit video is there too.
Well, that same video. Okay. Video. But tell me more about like how you plan to develop this over the next year. It's a necessity for you to grow these all three of these channels, maybe just a couple of them. I don't know. But how are you thinking about it?
Well, I'm not doing TikTok at all. TikTok, whatever. Maybe I'll post stuff on there. I don't have it on my phone, but like, I'm uninterested in it. I mean, politically, I don't want to support it. It's not a good place to be. I haven't scrolled TikTok in months. So TikTok, I'm kind of leaving out. I would like the center of my independent content creator business to be YouTube because YouTube feels safe. YouTube feels like a better proving ground path into, like I said, like a feature length documentary type career. So I like YouTube for that reason. I do want that to be the center of what I'm doing. Over the next year, I think my content on my personal accounts will be very wide ranging. The stuff that I have planned right now, like obviously the first thing was this like 12 minute. Yeah, exactly. Testing. And like, it's whatever I have time for in the moment, but to make sure I'm posting consistently and also just seeing what I liked making, what the audience is responding to in topic and style and length. I've been editing for quite some time now the YouTube length version of the entire sheep to sweater journey, which I also filmed. I filmed the entire thing vertical and horizontal. And I had 12 hours of footage or more that I was combing through. And I think I've gotten it down to like an hour and a half or 2 hours. I think the final length of the video will still be about an hour, but it's the entire journey of me over 4 months, 90 hours of work. Turning a raw sheep fleece that I shear at the beginning of the video into a sweater. And so I think that one will be very long. And it's one that I'm trying to take my time editing and make like a better production quality than others. Some of it I think will be kind of like video essay type stuff where it'll be, I think, easier to produce if I've kind of like written something and then have like fun footage that goes with that. For example, in August, my brother and I are going to see the eclipse in Spain. My brother has a goal to see an eclipse on every continent. So we're checking off Europe for him this summer. No, that one will be in 2038.
Oh, amazing.
Yes. hopefully he has enough money for a trip to Antarctica by then. He'll figure it out. So we're going to Spain to see the eclipse this summer. I think I'll make a video about eclipses that's basically like a video essay on like the history of eclipses and what they have meant to civilization over the years. That's also tied in with this like fun footage of like me and my brother who were like incredibly close.
Can
so I think
shoot?
Like that's I can teach him enough. I'm okay. Also like super lo-fi. My whole sheep to sweater thing was shot on my iPhone. I am team lo-fi production.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the channels, I'll be experimenting with a lot of stuff on them, but like the name of the game for me is just getting stuff out and trying stuff. I am also going to be collab posting with the Morning Brew accounts as often as it is relevant. Obviously the content has to be something that's relevant for both of our accounts, but especially now that you can cross post on YouTube, I've been cross posting all my shorts too. And that's grown the accounts a lot.
Yeah. Something that we spoke about when we first talked about doing this episode, I'm going to paraphrase what you'd said. I was asking you what you'd want to talk about and asking you about the creator contract, and you expressed anger at people exploiting talented comedians, some of your friends who might not be skilled in the business of social media, and then companies work with them, maybe sign them to a contract that's exploitative. I don't want to paraphrase you too much here, but I'd love you to speak on this.
Yeah, I think that there are so many brands creating short form content now that are creating contracts that are like old school, like record deal levels of exploitative, where it's like the creator gets like maybe a small flat fee for participating. And then gets like a very small cut of ads, which also I don't think any of those places are monetizing super well either on their short form content. I mean, you don't see a lot of ads on a lot of those like short form video only shows. And I know from friends who have sent me contracts, like they're bad. Like I would caution all creators to like really look at that critically and decide if that's something that you're even interested in. I think the pitch a lot of the time is, oh, well, we'll just handle all of the production. You know, you just have to drop in and be talent. But to what end? Because, I mean, also IP is a question there of like, okay, you're building this account. Who's getting what? You know, you run the show for 8 weeks and then you don't continue it. Then what do you do? But to think about, do you need to work with a brand like that who's, I think a lot of them are very exploitative, or can you build something on your own for like, it's so easy to film something, have your friend hold an iPhone. Like we're talking about the kind of shows that like film at the park or film on the sidewalk or film on the street. And it's like, how hard was that to film? What is the production support that they're giving you? How hard was that to edit? You know, maybe there are real benefits for some people, and maybe some people really do appreciate the idea of just dropping in somewhere, of, you know, the other shows on these networks, you know, maybe helping promote at the start. But I caution all of my friends, especially the ones who have sent me the contracts they're getting, that like I have not seen one that I think is fair. And I do think that they're just taking advantage of the fact that this is such a new space. It is the Wild West. But I think what most people are looking for, creators, comedians who want to make like a serialized vertical video show, I think what most of them need is someone to film and edit. Yeah. You can pay someone to film and edit or have your friend film and you edit. And you can end up largely in the same place, except for when an advertiser comes in, which again, these advertisers, when they come in, are inbound. They see the show and they want to advertise on it. Then you get that money instead of, you know, you getting a very small percentage of it per your, you know, whatever contract. I think it's a super predatory thing in the creator space right now that is so frustrating to watch.
So on an optimistic angle on this, though, it sounds like the way Morning Brew does this is really thoughtful and considered. And like, yes, you know, we're negotiating for certain things, but it sounds like it came from a good place. And this is a business that knows that it serves them and their employees, their talent well to foster young talent, educate young talent, build young talent up. And then those people are just naturally, such as you, maybe Dan at some point, are going to want to leave. And then they find the next person. And that's sort of the function of a company like this. Going back to contrast what a good contract looks like. We were just talking about the exploitative version. Can you speak a little bit more on that of like, what are the green flags in a situation like this?
Absolutely. I think you need to know going into a contract what you can and can't do for yourself. So for example, I know that I can't film and edit. It's awesome that Morning Brew has hired a full-time person to film and edit my show. He's really great. I also am the one who got to pick him out. His name is Dylan Avillanoza, and he's fantastic. He actually just started. I know that I don't have to pay Dylan out of my own money because he's here. It's great. Mm-hmm. So I know that I have that production support. I have a steady income, which is great. It's also like a fair income where the types of contracts I was talking about before, they're like stipends for like an 8-week stint of a show where like I'm a salaried employee, like on a 2-year contract term. It's also very clear on like what my growth goals are, what would make us both want to continue the contract versus not. And Morning Brew is also a different model. It's like it's a broader media company where I think the most predatory contracts I've seen are coming out of companies that just do short form vertical video. Where like Morning Brew is like we're not traditional media, but we have more of
like a new institution, newsroom.
Yeah. We have a newsroom. We have other stuff going on. We also have like a more diverse income as a company where like there's not this crazy pressure on video to like constantly perform and be viral hit or not. Yeah. It's like, no, we can, you know, be good and grow, but like it's not make or break if our short form vertical video is not bringing in all the money for the company. Because I do think short form vertical video is an incredibly fickle space. Algorithms change, platforms die. Like that's why like moving to be an independent content creator, like I do not want any of my income to be coming from Instagram Reels. God forbid. That is scary stuff.
Be YouTube entirely.
YouTube entirely. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to say no to Instagram deals, but like, I would like to stay focused on YouTube.
Yeah. One more thing I want to leave with. Back to that panel we spoke about, Beyond Silos, the shared future of documentary journalism and content creation. You are not the only talented person up on that stage. I want to know what you took away from that conversation.
Absolutely. There were so many interesting people there. Nicholas Bruckman, who makes some really fantastic feature-length documentaries, he's doing something really interesting in the doc space that I had not heard of, where a brand will fund a documentary, but they retain, like he as a filmmaker retains complete editorial and journalistic integrity. The brand never sees it. So the example he gave was Oatly, I think, one of the oat milk companies, paid for him to make a documentary that's some way about milk.
Yeah.
And then he found this whole thing about how the Got Milk campaign actually bankrupted a million like American dairy farmers. Like it was like the worst thing to happen to dairy farmers, the Got Milk campaign, which seems crazy that the thing promoting dairy milk would have done that. So that was really interesting to learn that docs can even be funded that way. I had never heard of that. I believe the doc is called The Price of Milk. Anthony Demieri was there, who is of course fantastic. He runs Melted Solids, which did all of Zoran's campaign video. Anthony and I first met because he also films Subway Takes, some episodes of Subway Takes, not all of them anymore. So we met while he was filming my Subway Take, and then now I, you know, see him around at these type of things. He's so amazing. I mean, everything he does in this space, I think, is very smart. And he does a really great job specifically bridging the gaps between doc work and social and like how there's like not a line between them. It's, in fact, very, very, very blurred. And like also I think sometimes trying to find that line is like unproductive and just like not super even needed. And then Shalini Sharma, who is fantastic as well and works at NBC Universal. She spoke a lot about, again, things I didn't know that they were up to over there, about all the ways that they're trying to adapt to being online in the ways that they think about it. I liked something she said about how sometimes they know that a story is like just devastating and it's not going to perform well on social because it's like too sad, or like the algorithms are going to like nuke their reach because it's like a gruesome story or something. But she's like, we are NBC. Like, we have to cover these stories anyway. And I think it's nice to hear from traditional media, and traditional media that we often think of as like not knowing how to post on social, is like, well, sometimes they're posting videos that bomb on social because they're like, we are NBC. We have to tell this story anyway.
Yeah. This way. So this reminds me what you said too, like both that and what you were saying about Anthony and his work and how that line between doc and social is blurry and maybe irrelevant. Something I think about very often in this work, told to me by our mutual friend and my former boss, Ariel Rubin. We were, you know, he and I were working together at this software company doing marketing. And he said, Francis, like, we're not competing with other companies like ours. We're competing with anything you can look at on your phone, right? And that has really shaped how I think about this. And, you know, I think I asked a question of you earlier about this panel about like how you identify your work and whether those labels matter. And to me, I think of these things not as like, it's less about the way to understand how like audiences' relationships with content is less about where it's made and more about the site of consumption, right? Like, if you're, if you're scrolling on Instagram Reels, everything is entertainment, even if it's news. And that's why something that NBC posts that's like a devastating story won't do as well, because everything on Instagram has to be entertainment. And even if it's educational, even if it's news, it's entertainment at the end of the day.
Right.
It's majority entertainment, right? I don't know. I'm curious if you have more opinions on that.
I do feel like that's true. I often feel like the best place for like Instagram Reels in that space can be a discovery engine where someone goes, they see a short clip from a doc while they're in the like entertainment Reels headspace, and maybe they file it away for later or go look it up on their laptop or whatever, and then they switch headspace. But I think social as a discovery engine for those things that still don't live on social still does make sense. But yeah, I agree that I think Reels can be a hard space for certain content to thrive. I just think it makes sense for almost everything.
It makes
like
sense
at least
everything.
As a discovery engine.
Yeah, that's a great place to end it. Right there.
Instagram Reels is everything to me.
Instagram Reels is everything to Macy Gilliam. Where should people go to find your stuff?
I'm at Macy Gilliam everywhere. Particularly, please go subscribe to my YouTube, which I am super excited about and have lots of fun stuff coming out on soon.
Perfect.
And thank Instagram, of course, which is everything to me.
Instagram is everything to her. Listener, we'll see you next week. Listener, you are everything to me. Ciao.
Hi there. My name's Tom. I'm the producer of the Creator Spotlight podcast. I've just made a playlist on our YouTube channel of our top 10 episodes. So whether you're new here or you've been watching and listening for a little while, check out that playlist to make sure you've seen and heard our top 10 most popular episodes. I'll keep the playlist updated as the top 10 changes. If you're on YouTube, just click on that box over there. That's our top 10.